Hell is God? That's the provocative title of a new book by the Australian Jesuit author Father Richard Lennart, who talks of the mystery of human suffering. The book comes from his struggle to come to terms with the tragedy that befell his own family when his 28-year-old sister was left completely paralysed from the neck down in a car accident. Father Lennart says he wrote the book after becoming convinced that his struggle and reflection in dealing with his own family's suffering following that accident could help other people maintain their faith in God when tragedy strikes their lives. I began by asking him what made him choose the provocative and somewhat shocking title, Where the Hell is God?
The title Where the Hell is God came from the day that my sister had a car accident and was left a quadriplegic as a result of her injuries. And my mother and I, when we got to the hospital and discovered the extent of these injuries and that she was now a 28-year-old woman who couldn't move anything from her neck down, my mother, who's a daily mass-going Catholic, just turned to me with tears in her eyes and said, "Where the hell is God?" And this was a woman who had total and complete faith in God, and at that moment it just expressed such an anguish, such a sense of abandonment. So that's where it came from.
And what did you answer your mother then?
I said to my mother at that moment that I think it was a rhetorical question, of course, but being a classic Jesuit, I had to answer it. So I said to my mother, "I cannot and will not believe in a God who sat in heaven and said, 'I need another quadriplegic, and Tracy, you're going to do, and so let's get a car accident happening. I don't know that God, I can't love that God, and I won't serve that God.'" And my mother said, "Well, where is God then?" And I said, "Well, I think God is as devastated as we are that this accident's happened, and God's holding on to us, weeping with us." My mother didn't say a word, but 1 hour later, I heard her talking to her sister, who's also her best friend. And her sister must have also said, "Where is God in all of this, Joan?" And I heard my mother say, "Well, Mercia, I can only believe that God is as devastated as we are, holding on to us, weeping with us." And so there was something about that line, the response to that question, that resonated very deeply, that within an hour my mother could have made it her own.
Was your own faith severely tested in the wake of this accident? I mean, because people usually ask, why did it happen? Why?
My faith was severely tested by this accident, not so much because of the event, curiously, but in some Catholics' response to the event. I had people who wrote to me and said, "Tracy must have done something terrible to offend God, and God has seen fit to punish her in this life. So she now needs to accept that punishment, and then she might yet merit heaven." Or things on that theme, that God was getting us one way or another. The second group of people wrote and said, "Well, Tracy's suffering is sending up beautiful building blocks to heaven where she'll have a glorious mansion when she dies," which is commonly called pie in the sky when you die theology. The third group of letters, and we got a lot of these, or I did, people wrote and thought it was consoling to tell us how very blessed we were by God, because we were told to remember that God only sends the biggest crosses to those who can bear them. And I just wanted to scream at that. We had many priests and Jesuits, actually, some Jesuits, who wrote and quoted Isaiah 55 by saying, "My ways are not your ways, and my thoughts are not your thoughts." In other words, somehow God's done this to us and we can't see why, and one day we'll find out, one day we'll discover. And I found that untenable. And then many, many people kept saying, "Well, it's all a mystery, and we just don't know, and we'll never know this side of death." And those responses drove me to more desolation and more despair than the actual accident. So yes, it tested my faith enormously, but mainly the traditional platitudes that sometimes we give out in the face of bad news and suffering, that tested my faith much more.
So what, if you could sum it up in a sentence or two, is the message you're trying to get across in this book?
I'm trying to get across that there's a very, very big difference to God inflicting pain, disease, suffering and death, and God permitting it. And I don't know that many Christians at this stage anyway make that distinction. I think I know people who've walked away from faith over really bad things that have happened in their life because they believe God did it to them, and they fall out of love with God. The second thing I hope this book is about is it's trying to move away from those platitudes and just try and recover a God who is our friend, who is accompanying us in the richest sense of that word, is in solidarity with us. And thirdly, I hope the book really puts to death, in a sense, some of the nonsense which passes for decent pastoral theology in the wake of pain and suffering, that these things just don't work. And to say them to people only compounds their pain. It doesn't help them.
What you're saying, though, does fly in the face of the traditional God of the Old Testament, the God, the punitive God, the vengeful God. Do you find that some people find that message harder taken than saying that you're going against the Bible?
I'd say two things in the face of that. Firstly, that if other Christians and other Catholics come to different conclusions about this than I do from what I've written, I'm delighted for that. I'm not arrogant enough to think I've solved the problem of evil. If that was the case, this deserves to be a bestseller. So if other people find another solution more helpful, I'm happy for them. And if they want to believe in a vengeful God, that's fine. The problem with the vengeful God is that we believe not in the Old Covenant, but in the New Covenant in Jesus. And in Christ we can find no vengeance, no destruction, no death-dealing, no inflicting of pain, no sending suffering on his enemies, nor on his friends. Not directly. Anyway, so the whole idea is when we see Jesus in action, we say that that's God in action. Therefore, that's the God I want to believe in. And that's completely in line with the New Testament. So I'm happy to move away from the Old Testament witness only because I'm a New Testament person. And in Jesus, I see the heart of God revealed, the life of God revealed, and the action of God revealed.
You don't find then that some people say, well, what you're portraying in your book makes God seem rather powerless. There's all these bad, evil things going on in the world, this terrible suffering, yet he can't do anything about it except share in your grief.
Yes, there is. I'm open to that charge. And it is true that I do talk about God's power in the book. There's and also God's knowledge. But actually, I think with every single response to evil always comes up about God's power. Because if God's powerful, I jolly would like him to be a lot more powerful than he seems to be right now. Keep intervening. Intervene much more. Don't heal one person. Heal tens and tens of thousands of people. So I look at miracles in the book, and I look at God's power in the book, and I also look at God's knowledge in the book. Because while I will not walk away from God's presence or God's love, God's power or God's knowledge, I think we've got to think those through carefully. We actually do believe in the Christian tradition that God could keep intervening in the world but chooses not to for our sake and for the evolution and the development of the world. Well, I think the same might be true about knowledge. God could know everything but chooses not to, or alternatively, God can't know the unknowable, that it is by definition unknowable even to God. Now, that's a departure from the Christian tradition, and I readily accept it. But when you start wrestling with these questions, these are the sorts of issues that come up, and running away from them doesn't help. And simply saying, I'm certainly not saying I've found the answer. I simply know that there between God's power and God's knowledge, accompanying with God's presence and God's love and God's unchangeability, are absolutely essential things for Catholics and Christians to think at if they want to have a coherent and intelligent response to evil.
So do you set out in your book some advice to people who might find themselves in the same situation that you found yourself in after the tragedy of your sister's accident?
I don't directly come with advice, like I don't say, here's what you should do. But it's a simple book and it's a small book. And I don't directly come with advice, like I don't say, here's what you should do. But it's a simple book and it's a small book and it's an accessible book. I wanted to write something which wasn't a heavy and great tome, but was more a pastoral response to a difficult theological situation and a deep human grief. And each of the seven chapters is really trying to say to people, here's a traditional response we've had, here's another way at looking at it. And if the letters and feedback that I've got, at least at this stage, is anything to go by, people have found it deeply consoling and very helpful. Just as one example, at one stage in the book I say, God doesn't need little angels in heaven. We've traditionally said to grieving mothers who are miscarrying babies, well, don't worry, you know, God needed another angel in heaven, so your baby was taken by God to heaven. I got a letter the other day from a woman who had had four miscarriages, 60 years ago, and she wrote to me that she's been angry with God for 60 years until she read that chapter. And all of a sudden, she didn't have to believe that God took her babies at all, and that God doesn't need any angels in heaven, though we have no question about where her children are. They're certainly enjoying eternal life. But she's carried that for 60 years, and it's such a vivid image that was once said with the best of intentions. But for this woman, it's been a block to her prayer, she told me in the letter, for the last 60 years. So if that's even the only outcome of this book, then I think it was worth writing.
And has your feedback all been positive, or have there been some dissenting voices that say they disagree?
There no doubt will be, and there have been a few. Sometimes, of course, friends and family who read the book at this stage may not be brave enough to tell me they didn't like it. And I guess there'll be other reviewers. That's fine. I'm serious when I say that I'm not pretending that I've got the last word or the only word on the subject. Importantly for me, my mother's response, who gave us the title of the book, my mother's response was one of the more interesting. She said that after she read the book, she didn't know what she believed anymore, because I was challenging some of the very traditional things that she had grown up with and had at some times found comfortable. Though then she told me she read the book again, and indeed she subsequently read it a third time, and she said, actually, now I find it very consoling. And she left me with the nice thought that she said, you should tell everybody to read it more than once.
And your sister's still alive?
My sister's still alive. She's very well. She had no head injuries. So thank God we've always had her in her personality and character. She's a remarkable woman. She's now 50 years of age. She's had 22 years of being washed, fed, turned, toileted and clothed. She had been a nurse with Mother Teresa in Calcutta for 3.5 years. She'd come back to Australia and nursed the Aboriginal people in the remote outback of Australia. So this was an extraordinary woman when the accident happened. So I owe her so much about discovering about faith, about humanity, and indeed about myself, that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't have been able to walk with her through the valley of tears and the shadow of death.
And she presumably knows about the book?
Yeah, she's read the whole thing, and she likes the book. I'm fairly careful in the book that at the beginning of it I tell her story, but I let her tell her story. She's written her own book, which is also available, called The Full Catastrophe, and it's about her years in Calcutta with Mother Teresa and then back in the Northern Territory. She said she found it a very interesting and informative book, and she also thought that other people would find it a great comfort and a great support. So the two most important people around whom the book hinges, they were very happy with it, which is a great relief and a great joy to me, I have to say.
I was speaking to Father Richard Leonard, Jesuit priest and author.